Corvus is still trying to get rid of this thing.
I feel better today.
Well, that's good to hear.
I gave all but one.
Why are you worried about the other five?
Okay, so you should have two old exams, some homework papers coming back, and you should have a lecture worksheet. Everybody get one of those?
Wait.
See,
I don't have a lecture worksheet.
You need a lecture worksheet, so there's Greg here.
He also doesn't have these.
There you go, sir. Okay, anybody else need a lecture worksheet? Oh, you need the tests. Okay, are there spare tests here for Travis? Are you back here with Aaron or something?
Spare tests?
Yeah, spare tests. Yeah, Travis wants one. Here's a spare test and another spare test. So who's missing today? Ben's missing. Yeah, Ben is always late, so we'll just make a little pile. Where does he usually sit? Right up here, so we'll just put it. Or did you already make a pile for Ben? Maybe not. Okay. Okay. Let's see what we can do here. Well, the exam is on Wednesday, right? No, Friday. When was it? When is it? Friday? Friday. Is that right? Friday?
That's what we're remembering.
Exam Friday. Okay.
Every year,
oh, that reminds me. I'm supposed to encourage you guys. If any of you guys haven't signed up for the banquet and you want to, you need to send Renee an email because you can still get in if you send her an email like right after class.
Can we do a study session?
She said noon.
Yeah.
At the end of the lecture, if he asks for questions or for presentation, how can we apply the 480C?
Yeah, right. Yeah. My apologies about that, but I guess that's when you wanted the exam, huh? Yeah.
Actually, we'd rather that we had a ghost exam that we didn't have to take, but we counted it as 100% anyway, but...
Yeah. Yeah. How would you have liked it if we had just decided that maybe we'll just go into this racket, right? We'll have this deal where we just sign you up and you all get diplomas, right?
No.
Well, considering that all the engineers that work in the field say that they graduate and then find out they know nothing about the field, it might
be okay, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Okay.
Well, we wouldn't pass the
Yeah, it would be nice to pass the FE exam. Okay, so today we're going to look at Bode plots with complex poles, okay? And I think what I'll do is, do you want to make one of those tests a homework problem or a homework assignment? How are you feeling? I mean,
just make him do the morning of the test.
What's that? How many people finished all the old tests that I gave before they took the last test? Yeah. The redo test, you know, we had tests before that we passed out, you know, like you had to...
Oh, like for review?
Yeah, for review.
Yeah.
Right? Did you guys all do those?
No, I didn't finish it.
Yeah. Would have been good if you had, probably, right?
Because that last problem was...
Does it encourage you if it's homework problem, or does it...
But also... Yeah. Also, if it was due before the test,
it's easier for me to catch up on all the stuff that I'm behind before we stop having homework.
Yeah, that's true. But does that mean you won't be ready for the next test? That's all I'm worried about.
Well,
I mean, if you're caught up, that doesn't really help me too much because I also have to have you do well on the next test, right? I don't know. It's up to you guys. You don't want to have homework, we can just leave it like that. Yeah, you got two old tests.
So how would these count if it's not homework?
They wouldn't, I guess, right?
Well, then...
Right? You wouldn't have to do them, right? There would be no point, except to pass the test, right?
Oh, yes.
These could be like...
We have difficulty with secondary motivation.
Oh, so I better make it homework. Is that what you're saying?
One of these could be part of the test grade, like 20% of the test is finishing this. One of them.
Well, it depends, like, how important this is in relationship to the test, because, like, mostly I just want to study for the test, so if I'm going to be studying...
Well, that's
the
best stuff I can give you for the test.
Okay, so well, then, yeah.
I mean, I don't know of anything better than an old exam, right?
Yeah. Another thing is how long it's going to be, because your first one was about two-thirds the length of the second one.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know,
usually the redos are harder, so make sure you do well on the first one. Adam. Sure, we can make one of them as homework.
I mean, I don't know if like what I have time to do both of them, but I mean.
Yeah. Okay, you pick. Which one do you want? How can we determine which one is which? They both look the same, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
The one with the longer first question.
Why? Because you don't want to take the log
because
the
it's
Laplace
on top.
Transform of that one.
This one. So the first, so
it's
the one,
on
the one that only has one line toward the bottom of the page, right? That's what Travis wants, right? This is the one you want right here.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that okay?
But you better do this one too.
Okay. So homework number. What is it? Anybody know? 11? I'll take your word for it. We'll just say 11. Well, maybe I better do. We got to get here anyway, right?
Yeah.
Starting from the definition? Is that what it says?
On the other one. Not on the one.
Okay, so the one we want says...
Oh, yeah. No, on this one.
Problem two, this problem investigates or something, or problem one, starting from the definition of Laplace transform. So, homework number, oh, I was going to look. I forgot you said 11, right? Yeah, 11. Yeah. 11. Is the other one starting as the first word on that problem? Okay, so that's the one we're doing. Please, Travis. Yeah, probably. That would be a good time because I don't want to make it due after the exam or you won't do it, right? I mean, it won't do you any good on the exam if it's due after the exam, right? Then that's a whole week from today, right? It should be long enough to do it.
A week with a Monday of 10 classes.
Yeah, that's even better, right? Although you all be up there skiing, so. Somebody will be. Okay, so. Let's look at H of S here. Let's look at a simple H of S. Okay. Now, last day we looked at transfer functions which had simple poles and simple zeros. In other words, they factored down to an S minus some real number, right? Now, not all polynomials will factor down that way. Some of them will have complex roots. You know, when you do the quadratic equation on the, you know, set this thing equal to zero, the denominator equal to zero, you'll get some complex roots sometimes. In fact, maybe we should do that. So let's look at this. S squared plus 2... this funny zeta, which I have a hard time writing, omega 0 s plus omega 0 squared equals 0. To find the poles, this will give us the poles. Okay, so we got minus b, right? Minus 2 zeta omega 0 plus plus or minus the square root of b squared, which is 4 zeta squared omega 0 squared b squared minus 4ac. A is 1, c is omega 0 squared, all over 2a, which is just 2, right? So this would be s equals.
It does.
Probably in yours.
Yeah.
I'm just doing a general one here. And so now I can cancel out the 2's, and I'll get this thing equals minus zeta omega 0 plus or minus. Now it looks like I can factor an omega 0 squared out of this one, right? And the 4's will cancel with the 2 on the bottom. So I could actually make this more look like this. I'm going to make this omega 0 times minus zeta plus or minus the square root of zeta squared minus 1. Is that right? Now, you can tell when zeta, I mean, you did this on Tuesday, right? Zeta squared, when zeta equals 1, well, we get complex roots when zeta is less than 1, right? Right, and we get critically damped when zeta equals 1.
Critically damped
because the roots are repeated, right? If
it's plus or minus 0.
Plus or minus 0, right? If a zeta equals 1, I get plus or minus square root of 0, so both roots would be the same, right? So critically damped when zeta equals 1, right? Did I do that right? Is that right? Yeah. But we wouldn't want negative 1, because if we had negative 1, then there would be one positive root and one negative root. I mean, anytime you don't have the same, you got to have the same sign all the way through, otherwise you're going to have something that grows exponentially. It's going to have, maybe we should look at that just out of curiosity. What would happen if zeta was minus 1, okay? Notice then I would have omega 0 times plus 1, right, as my critical root, because this would be 0 here, right? So that would be a positive root, right? So that would grow exponentially, not die out. It would be e to the plus something, right? And so those kind of roots are hopefully not going to occur. They actually can occur when you put feedback in the system. That's when you have positive feedback. That makes the roots go into the right half S plane, where the positive part of the S of the root of the poles are.
So would that be like a reoccurring feedback, like?
Well, no, it would kind of be like this. Suppose that, you know, your car has the accelerator pedal down at the foot. Well, if I put that pedal on the back of the seat between my back and the seat, and then I could push on the steering wheel to get going, right? And I wouldn't have to use my feet for anything. And maybe this would be a good thing for amputees or something, right? So suppose I was in kind of a hurry to get going. And, you know, I push on that pedal, right? And, of course, when I push on the pedal, it accelerates me, right? And when it accelerates me, my back goes into the back of the seat like this, right? Which is like pushing on the accelerator pedal full blast, right? And it keeps going. I just take off, right? That's positive feedback. So, in other words, you know, the faster you go, the faster it makes you go, right? and that's why it would take off. You know, I would be, you know, I'd take off, you know, right up the skateboard ramp and into outer space, right? So that's positive feedback. The feedback you get in with the microphone in the church is also a positive feedback, but it's somewhat unintentional. Maybe that was unintentional too, right? But yeah. But often you will do something where you actually try and make a feedback and control system that is supposed to have negative feedback, okay? So what happens when you take a feedback and control system? I mean, this is just kind of an aside here, because you see, you got to understand why in the world you're doing this stuff here. This is what you're going to learn in feedback and control here, okay? So we have some function A of S here, which is your plant, and then we've got this thing right here. I'm going to make this beta right here, but if this was beta of S, well, even if it's just beta, we could just do just beta. Constant kind of a thing, and I put a minus sign here and a plus sign here, and this would be, I'm going to call this the output, and this is the input, okay? So this could be the accelerator pedal or whatever, and really, what I really want to do is I would like X out here to be approximately 1 over beta times X in. And I'm going to call this XS here, because it's the source thing. And I'm going to call this guy here XI, okay? This is the input to my system, whatever it is. This stuff that I added was the feedback and control system that I added to my plant here, my whatever my gadget was I wanted to control, okay? And so what it's doing is it's trying to make the output approximately this, and that works. I mean, let's just do a quick little algebra here. If I look at XI equals XS minus, I'm going to call this XF here. That's the feedback quantity. And XF here is equal to beta times X out, right? And X out is equal to A times XI, right? I'm just trying to figure out what X out is in terms of, maybe I don't, instead
I mean,
of a...
Why is XF beta times X out?
Well, here's X out right here, I multiply by beta, I get there. See, the beta is the transfer function for for this little block right here.
So
maybe I should just leave it like that. Right, this is like A is a transfer function, beta. So that's why you want to use transfer functions that make stuff like this so easy, right? If you didn't, you'd have some horrible differential equation that described this thing. Well, you know, maybe it wouldn't be horrible, but XI is equal to A divided by, X out divided by A, I guess I should say. So this is XO divided by A, and I'm just going to say this guy equals that guy, and I'm going to solve for X out. So I've got X out equals A times XS minus beta X out, right? So now I gotta grab this guy and bring him over here. So I got X out times 1 plus beta A of them equals A XS. And so now I can divide both sides by 1 plus beta A. And so you can see that this is now X out here. X out equals A over 1 plus beta A. Now if A is very large, generally A has some kind of amplifier in it. Usually the first thing I'll do is put a preamplifier right here so that it will be sensitive to any little, you know, change in the little XI there. So suppose A is a very large gain. If A is a large gain, then this thing boils down to 1 over beta, which is kind of what I wanted. And the reason this is really great in like electronics or whatnot is beta will be just made up of a set of resistors. A set of resistors will easily turn the output voltage down to something small, right? And then 1 over beta, if you know beta was 0.5, then 1 over beta would give me a gain of 2, right? So, and resistors are extremely linear. You know, V equals RI, and it works just wonderfully, super linear all the way up until that resistor smokes, okay? And even it can even be smoking and it still V equals RI, okay? It's wonderful. So you make this thing, it makes your whole thing only depend on something very linear. And so, you know, that makes a nice linear amplifier. That's how you take a nonlinear A and turn it into a linear thing. But what we have here is, you know, we have these transfer functions, and what I wanted to talk about was what would happen, what could make this thing possibly oscillate, okay? Now this is an A as a function of S, okay? And so you could think about this as maybe I put in a sinusoidal voltage here, and we could change that S to J omega. That's the kind of stuff we've been doing. And we think about, you know, sinusoidal steady state here. So what would happen? Well, you know what happens when you put a sine wave into a linear system? The amplitude gets scaled by some amount, right? And the phase scoots over and usually delayed a little bit, right? And so think about this. Suppose at the frequency we're exciting this thing that the delay is 180 degrees going through that. I mean, you know, all you need is like two poles plus a little bit, you know, and you got 180 degrees, right? And so if you went 180 degrees and this beta doesn't delay you at all, it's just a constant multiplier, maybe 0.5 or something, and if you went around this thing, you see that minus sign right there? That takes that delay of 180 degrees. If you move a sine wave over 180 degrees, it's minus what you started with, right? And now when we multiply by this, that flips it upside down. I was trying to make a negative feedback. That's why I put negative there, right? And all of a sudden, when you get back to the input here, you've got maybe something of the same sine wave in phase with what you started with, and it might be even bigger than what you put in to start with, or it might be equal, right? In which case, this thing will oscillate, right? And that's an unintended consequence of this beautiful system that was supposed to make everything more stable, right?
Now, when you say oscillate, what do you mean?
I mean that, you know, you put in this sine wave. Maybe there was a tiny little noise at this frequency, right? It went around the loop, and when it got back around there, it was that same little oscillation, only a little bigger, right?
Okay.
And it goes around and around and just goes, and pretty soon you got this, you know, exponentially growing, you know.
Which is pretty much what microphone feedback is.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but unfortunately, microphone was unintended. In other words, this feedback loop in the microphone thing was not something you, an engineer, put in there. That was something that just happened because the microphone picks up the sound from the speakers,
right.
And it's kind of hard to stop that from happening, right?
Right.
You just need to keep them away from one another. And try and make, you know, this loop, by the time it gets back around here, you know, you can hear it just as it's beginning to oscillate. That's kind of like when it just gets around here, it's just barely about the same size as what it was when it started, right? But if you get it closer, put that microphone even closer to the speaker, then it's like, you know, it's like when it got around here, it was twice as big as what it started with, right? And then you're in deep weeds, right? So what I'm saying is that understanding where the poles of this new thing, and you look at this new thing, see that A is a function of S, and that A is a function of S, so you got a new transfer function for this feedback thing, right? And if this feedback thing with the new, you know, the whole thing on there, if it has poles that have positive real parts, you're toast, right? It's gonna oscillate, it's going to grow until it breaks. Does that make sense? So when you're doing feedback, you have to understand these kind of things. You have to be able to look at the Bode plot and say, look, when are the poles going to have real parts? And what I'm saying is, Joe was asking me, you know, what happens if we pick zeta equals minus 1? Well, when you pick zeta equals minus 1, the number in front of S is S squared is a plus 1. This one's a minus 1, and that's a plus number, right? And omega squared has got to be a plus number, right? And when you do that, there will be one plus root, one positive root, and one negative root generally, right? And when you have a positive real part in the root, you're going to grow, right? And that would happen when you did this little trick right here. You tried to make you were smart and made this feedback system, but you didn't realize that you were going to have 180 degrees phase shift, you know, at that point, and it... So understanding what's going on here really pays, you know.
So a negative would make the 180 degree shift.
Well, the negative roots, remember when, if we were going to take this guy right here, and we would end up with, if we looked at the output, you know, output as a function of S, you could do, you would write this as S plus pole 1, sometimes some constant A, and then you'd have some B, S plus pole 2, right? And pole 1 might be pole 2 conjugate if it was complex roots. And if pole 1, a real part of pole 1, if the real part of pole 1 is, let's see, I guess it needs to be minus to get the poles, right? Minus. So if the real part of pole 1 is greater than 0, then the solution, you know, this guy here implies output as a function of t equals a e to the minus p1t plus b, no, I guess it's a e to the plus p1t, b e to the p2t, right? And if the real part of p1 is greater than 0, then this thing gets bigger exponentially, right? And so this would be growing solution. And that means, you know, it's going up as a function of time here, you know, right out the window. Right? And if real part is less than 0, then you're okay. It dies off. It comes down exponentially. You know, it doesn't grow.
Would an example of negative feedback then be like the soundproof rooms with honeycombs on the walls, or is that totally different? I mean,
well, sometimes you can think about those things in terms of feedback, but it's not like a classical example, really.
Would a better example be active?
Active,
sound?
Yeah, right. Sometimes they use active cancellation to try and do that.
Wouldn't.
But it's more like, you know, you have a rocket going up and you're trying to hit that rocket with a Patriot missile, you know. The Patriot missile looks and sees where that rocket's going, and the Patriot missile knows where it is, and it corrects its course based on, you know, trying to figure out how to crash into that Patriot missile. Well, it might be the same feedback, but it just depends on when it goes around the loop here. When you hear it, it kind of, you know, dies out. What happens is when it got back to here, it wasn't louder than what started it.
Right.
Okay. But
is that what we're talking about?
Well, what we're kind of thinking about here is I'm trying to give you a motivation for why we like to do these Bode plots, okay? Because if you look at the Bode plot of the loop gain here, A times beta, right? Then you can look and see where the 180 degrees phase shift curve comes, and then you'll know what frequency it's going to oscillate on. Because when you go around here and get 180 degrees phase shift, this next minus gives you the other 180 degrees, so now you got 360 degrees phase shift, and so what happens when you go around the loop, it builds, right? So you're going to use this Bode plot when you get to feedback, okay? So that's kind of what I'm trying to motivate. Why in the world are we even doing this stuff, right? Why does this make sense? Why is this worth worrying about? I mean, it seems kind of crazy. So the roots of this denominator of the transfer function are very important because they determine what's going to happen here, whether it grows or decays, right? And how it decays and how it grows, right? So that's what I'm trying to do, is get you the idea, the roots of the denominator of the transfer function, which are also called the poles. Where those poles are make a whole lot of difference, okay, in how the system behaves. If they're in the right-hand plane, the real part is positive, you're going to have an exponentially growing solution. It will it will break. If it's in the left-hand plane, everything's okay. And in general, we never have to worry about things being in the right-hand plane, because if you don't have something like positive feedback or whatever, everything, you know, just kind of dies out, right? I mean, the good Lord made our world kind of a safe place, right?
Good thing.
Good thing, yeah. And so we're the only ones, you know, that come along and add feedback to things and possibly make things unstable, right? So what I'm saying is, if you take and you're doing a circuit, suppose you're doing a circuit, okay? And you come up with a transfer function. And suppose it looks like this, but there's a negative sign in the middle term here. What would you do? You'd probably say, uh-oh, that means this thing is going to grow like this. And you'd look at that circuit and you'd say, is there any way that could happen? Now, that could happen if you have some of those diamond-shaped sources in there, because those diamond-shaped sources could be turned into negative resistance. Negative resistance basically will give you something that goes like this, right? Yeah, right. Yeah, that's true. We should celebrate that it's easily factorable. That would be a good thing to do too. Okay, so let's factored that thing now. Let me just kind of draw it for you here. So here's the S plane. And let's see if we can kind of understand this thing here. If zeta is greater than 1, you have roots that are somewhere on the real axis over here. You know, they're going to be kind of like right here, you know. They'll be the poles here and here. And these guys, you know, as you change zeta, they'll kind of come closer and closer together. And finally, when zeta equals 1, they'll be right on top of each other like that. And then as zeta gets over here to be less than 1, I guess I'm reducing zeta. Zeta, they call the damping ratio. That's what the MEs, they like using this zeta thing. It's the damping ratio, okay? And so when zeta gets less than 1, then these poles, you know, start moving out here, right? And so if we look at it, this thing actually kind of looks like, if zeta is less than 1, and that's this case, we'd have omega 0 times minus zeta plus or minus j root 1 minus zeta squared. Every time I have to think, how do I draw that thing? Okay, so now if we look at this thing, you can kind of look at it like this. If I had a root right here, there'd be the complex conjugate pair over there. And this says the real part, I go out minus zeta. So here's 0. So minus zeta would be right here. That point right there. Maybe I'll erase the whole thing and just draw it for just this case here. So, oops, I don't want a root. I want to make the... So I've got 1 up here and 1 down here. So this number right here is omega 0 times... That's omega 0 zeta. Okay? Right there. And then the up part, that's this distance right here, is omega 0 times the square root of zeta squared minus 1. And
1 minus zeta squared.
Whoops, I got it backwards. All right, 1 minus zeta squared. Okay, 1 minus zeta squared. And trying to think here, does this, if I take this thing squared plus that thing squared, I just get this distance right here, right? And that would just be omega zero, right? Isn't that right? If I take this thing squared plus that thing squared, you know, the real part squared plus the imaginary part squared, I just get this square root of 1 minus zeta squared becomes 1 minus zeta squared, and that, right? So that's just omega 0 is the length on this thing. and so if I take this thing over that thing, if I call this angle right here theta is equal to the angle whose cosine is it would be zeta over, it would just be zeta, right? Is that right?
Yes.
So really, zeta is the cosine of theta, right? That's what I'm saying, right? This length over that length is zeta, right? So zeta is the cosine of that theta. And omega zero is how far out it is here, okay? So if zeta, if the cosine of theta gets to be, I mean, if this root moves over here more, right, that would be theta is getting to be closer to 90 degrees here, right? If zeta gets closer to, what would that be? Zeta. Do I do this right? This guy over that guy, right? There's a cosine
of
theta.
Yeah, you're going from 1 closer and closer to 0.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're going closer and closer to 0, right?
One is where it's critically down.
So the theta would be coming up here to 90 degrees, which cosine of 90 is 0, right? And so we're getting closer to zero. As theta gets closer to zero, this pole gets much closer here. Now, what I'd like to think you to think about here when we're thinking about these poles, oh dear, that's interesting. I've never done that before. Pulled the thing right out. Yeah. Guess I don't need to really get that off too badly. But as this pole gets closer over here, I'd kind of like you to think about the rubber sheet analogy, okay? If we look at this transfer function right here, it has basically, where is it going to zero? If we were looking at the Bode plot for this thing, this is a low-pass filter, right? Because when I put in S as J omega, and I put J omega goes to infinity, this goes to zero, right? So basically, there's a zero out there at infinity. So you can kind of think about a rubber sheet where out there at infinity, it's all pegged down to zero. It's right on the whiteboard, okay? And at this point right here and that point right there, those are the roots of the denominator, right? So I've got like 1 over 0 in those places. And so there's like a big pole here that sticks way out that way and another one right here that sticks way out that way. And those poles are holding up this rubber sheet, which is kind of like a tent. You know, you can kind of think of this thing coming down like this, right? Coming down, it has to go to 0 at infinity, so it kind of comes down here, kind of comes down here, right? So can you kind of visualize this rubber sheet with these two pegs, you know, poles holding these things out, okay? And now if we were to take and look at the cut along the J omega axis, starting from omega equals zero that way, that would be basically what we're getting with the Bode plot, the height of this rubber sheet all the way along there. And if the pole gets close here, you're going to kind of be down here and you're going to jump up when you get close to that pole, right? And then it's going to go, and where's that jump going to be? It's going to be right about omega zero here, right? If it's close, right? And of course, if omega zero, I mean, if the zeta is over here, you know, made it so that the theta is almost zero, so you're over here, you're kind of going to have a big hump here, and you're going to die off, right? So when zeta is closer to one, it kind of comes down like this. When zeta gets, you know, over here, closer to zero, then you get this whoop-de-doo right here, okay? Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
Can you kind of see the rubber sheet thing?
No.
No?
Is it like a 3D graph?
Yeah, it's like a 3D graph. So coming out here, I mean, maybe if I could put this on the table, it would be cooler, right? And you'd have these poles going up there at each of these places right here, right? And there'd be this rubber sheet that comes down, and you know, it's got pegged to zero all the way out at infinity, and it, you know, kind of like a balloon or something, you're poking it up, and it kind of comes down smoothly. And then you just take the cut along the J omega axis, and that would be the thing, right? So that's kind of what we're thinking of when we're doing this Bode plot. We're just looking right along the J omega axis. And the reason we're looking along the J omega axis is because we can tell when it's going to what frequency it's going to oscillate at, basically. And we can tell if those poles ever get on this side, oh, we're toast, right? So understanding where the poles are and what the Bode plot looks like as a result of that is kind of important. So let's go and let's play with this in octave just for a minute. Okay, so here's an octave script. Can you guys all see that? Is that okay, Lauren?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here we go. We clear the figure, and I'm going to set up S as the transfer function variable, okay? And then I set up figure 1. That's going to be for this loop. I'm going to do figure 1. And I do this for loop. 4 zeta equals 1, stepping by minus 0.2. So I'm going to start out where it's basically critically damped, and I'm going to step by 0.2. down to 0.1, okay? And my transfer function is 1 over s squared plus 2 zeta s plus 1. So I picked omega 0 equal 1 for this example, okay? And then I set this thing right here. What this actually does is it's something I got off of Google so that it will actually plot several plots right over top of each other when you have a Bode plot, okay? Where it has both a magnitude and a phase. When I tried hold on, it only did the phase. I only got all multiple plots on the phase, so I had to do a little Googling to find out how to do that. So anyway, I'm going to do the Bode of G here, and we'll do it for, you know, however many times, starting 1, then, you know, 0.8, 0.6, 0.4, 0.2, right? And then we'll do the same thing down here, and this one, the only difference is we're doing a step response, okay? So what's the step response? That's when I hit this thing with a step function. In other words, I put a U of T in, right? So when I put a U of T in, it will have this kind of a bouncy behavior right here, right? Like that. And if it's if these guys, in this case, these guys are all underdamped because I did zeta less than 1, except for the zeta equals 1, I guess that's critically damped, right? But all the rest of them are underdamped, so they're going to go bouncing, you know, like this, right? And the ones with the poles closer to the J omega axis should bounce more, right? Does that make sense? Because they dry out less rapidly. In other words, when I move this thing around like this, the real part is not too far from the J omega axis, so it's going to die out very slowly here compared with over here, right? Because the real part is a much smaller number. E to the minus small number t takes a lot longer to die out, right? E to the minus 1,000 t just goes boom. 1/1,000th of a second, it's gone pretty much, right? Okay, so then let's run this thing and see what we get here. Okay, where's my mouse? Okay, I called it complexpoles.m. We'll see what we get here. Okay, let's find the figure here. Okay, here's figure 1. I guess I gotta finish the script here. Okay, so here we go. There's figure 1 and figure 2. So first of all, this figure right here, this is the step response, right? So this guy right here is the step response for zeta equals 1. There's no bounce in it, right? And then this is zeta equals 0.2, a little bounce, not much, right? And then zeta equals 0.4, oh, a little more bounce. Zeta equals 0.6, oh, we're getting a pretty good bounce now. And zeta equals 0.2, whoa, yeah, I like that one, okay? 0.2, I think. I went from 1 stepping by minus 0.2 to 0.1. So let's look at it again. Let's look at the, here's the thing I did. I started from 1 stepping by minus 0.2, so it went 1, then 0.8, 0.6, 0.4, 0.2, right? Okay, so this is the step response right here. And notice here, it goes up to 1, right? I mean, I put in that green line, and I got the bouncy thing, right? Okay, now here's the Bode plot. Okay, so let's look at the Bode plot. The one that comes down on the bottom right there, that's the zeta equals 1, right? There's no bounce, right? You can kind of think about the rubber sheet, and you're not going to have any big, you know, peaky stuff happening right on the, close to omega equals 0. I mean, omega 0, and that's 1 here. Omega 0 is 1, right? And then as you increase or decrease zeta, it goes up, and, you know, if you decrease zeta to 0, then it would go right through the roof. It would go to infinity, because zeta equals 0 would be, you know, when cosine theta is 0, which means it would be right on the j omega axis here, right? And the pole would go right, that was where the pole was actually right there on the omega 0, right on the real axis, and it would, you know, you'd see the cut going all the way to infinity, right? It would jump right up. And so what about these curves down here? These are the arctangent curves, right? Which one of these guys is for zeta equals the low zeta, the one that's close to the j omega axis? Which one? Is it this top one or the bottom one?
The smallest angle will be with the smallest zeta. Or the fastest hour, I guess it's changing.
Yeah. Now, maybe we should do a little bit of arithmetic here, or algebra, to try and figure that out, huh? Which is it going to be? I mean, we're out of time, but what do you think? I guess the fastest way to do it is just to go like this, right? Over to the thing, and it should be, my guess is, that the one that goes, that's more like this, that's more like a square, I think when I got omega 0 right on the j omega axis, it would just jump 180 degrees as I went right through that pole. But yeah, so we could just change this to be, make this zeta equals 0.4, okay. 0.4, I get the wrong one, let's change this other one. 0.4, okay, 0.43, whatever. Okay, and then I would go to my window here, run it again. Yeah, it looks like the one that went away, well,
that one doesn't
look like anything went away, right? Okay, let's do CLF. Probably clears only two, figure two, right? I have a bug in my script. I need a CLF on figure one, too. And now what we'll do is we'll run it again now. Okay, now you can see, yeah, it's only the ones that are, you know, getting closer to being like that, right? In other words, things get more wild when the poles get close to the J omega axis, even on the Bode plot. So, now, looking at those plots, you can kind of tell a little bit more how to make these kind of, you know, those kind of things. It's not as easy as when they had nice, simple, real roots that you can kind of see, well, I got some peaking going on or whatever.
What kind of labels are you looking for?
Yeah, what are we labeling here?
I just make labels. So what are you supposed to do? Tell what, which ones have the...
Label the Bode plots below.
Which zetas are which? So, like, is this the zeta equals 1 or is that the zeta equals 0.2? The one with the peaking is zeta equals 0.2. And the one that behaves wildly is zeta equals 0.2, right?
This is a transfer function, right?
Yes, that is a transfer function.
It's expressed in the S domain.
Yes, yes,
so
that's correct.
Going
so
over here, it's turning back to the T.
Yes, it will have some kind of results like this. Yeah, and actually the characteristic equation of this differential equation this came from, we'll be setting the denominator equal to 0 like we did here. This is really the characteristic equation.
Are the other bounds, are these when it's equal to 1?
Well, this is that same plot I just did here.
Yeah,
so
right,
this
right.
Was zeta equals point 0.2, this is point 0.4, point 0.6, point 0.8, and 1. And this is zeta equals point 0.2, point 0.4, point 0.6, point 0.8, 1.
Putting zero, have it grab.
zero?
I want to see zero.
Okay, you asked for it. It'll probably crash, but we'll try it.
Oh, because that's asymptotic.
We'll find out. You want to put in zeta equals zero. Zero. Or I'll make this zero, okay? You want to see both of them at zero? Zero. We'll see if this works. Division by zero.
Oh, right. Makes sense.
Yeah, there's the output. Here's the step response. It just oscillates, right?
Right.
And this thing, here's the Bode, this is the phase response right there, right? And actually, this one, you see, going to plus 180 is the same as going to minus 180. So it graphed this going to plus 180, but really it was going down to minus 180 down here. And, but this thing here divided by zero. So. Does that make sense? Did I get these pictures? Probably not, huh? I did a check. No, that's not this picture. Yeah.
Then the lower the
zeta. This is zeta, low zeta, this is high zeta.
Yeah, the normal kind of one,
like
but
that.
As it gets...
Yeah, and as it goes, it would right at the J omega axis, it would be this boom like this, a step function. Okay, so that's that one. What about, okay, which is which? Oh, you got two of them on there?
Yeah.
So
the
this
lighter
one.
The lighter one is the.
Is the original.
Yeah.
So this doesn't work so well.
I changed the value so they kind of matched up on the bottom resistor.
Sure, no, that's fine. That's good. But this thing actually has a better slope than that one does.
Mm-hmm.
So our great idea didn't pan out.
Yeah, so this is Q1, so that's the first one.
Mm-hmm.
But I put it down to 1 ohm, so it would pull more current through to match that one.
Oh.
I don't know if that's a good thing to do or.
Probably. 1 ohm is like you're drawing a tremendous amount of
current. A
ton
of current.
140 milliamps, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, nevertheless, yeah, so it seems like our idea didn't pan out. And I think that's what Andrew was getting too. So this goes in that pile,
yeah, that's
right?
An electronic, so.
Yeah,
that's electronics. Why is this a minus one?
Oh, I don't know. Let's see.
Because like I was doing it, and when you do the Laplace of this, you get like SIS minus the initial, which this
is. Right, and then it should come over. I think you're right. Mm-hmm.
And then I know I got this.
But let's see, you know, this was the input right here, right? And you're trying to find, what are you trying to find, I of S?
Oh, you're trying to find, like, the transfer function. But I was just wondering.
This says I of S, yeah, so I of S.
This one should just be a plus, right?
Yeah, it looks like it should be, because this guy is a minus right here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. But wait a minute, this is C, right? Oh, this is...
S, it's supposed to be S.
Oh, this is L, you mean?
Yeah, that was like a parenthesis.
Right, okay, so it's L times that, right? And L was 1. So it's L di dt. Now you got, let's see, you got minus V plus Ri plus L di dt, yeah. And then this should be a minus the initial condition, which was 1, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so then that would bring over here.
They asked for the transfer
right,
function.
Right, so this should have been a plus.
Okay, and then for the transfer function.
Oh, no, wait a minute. This minus 1, the 1 over L, came from this 1 over L. That should have been a... Oh, yeah, okay, when you bring it over. Yeah, no, I think that's right. It's actually this minus sign actually went with that guy. Because it should have been... this 1 over L actually came from this guy right here. This would have been... No, wait a minute. No, this is an L. So, yeah, no, you're right. It's that one right there that's wrong.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I asked for the transfer function, so I think that's
right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I just need to set that initial to 0.
Yeah, set the initial to 0. And that's why I guess it didn't really...
What was... I missed what you did the first time you had poles in here.
Well, as we change zeta here, what happens is we change zeta. If we start out with zeta as, say, 2 or something, it would be a pole here and a pole here. Okay? When you look at this,
okay.
You know, when you did this here, you've got minus zeta... or minus omega 0, and then you've got this guy right here plus or minus that thing, right? And so this guy times that guy is right here, okay? And then plus or minus the thing is equally spaced around there. And then as you change zeta, as zeta gets smaller, these guys move in like this, so they're moving in, you know, equal amounts until...
Yeah.
Until they both get right there, that's when zeta equals 1, and then they split. One goes this way, and one goes that way.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
I think so.
And they're equally, you know, this is if that guy's up that far, this guy's down the same amount. And these guys are right, they're split right around this point right here. You know, the distance from here to here is the same as the distance from there to the other pole there. So they kind of come in equally, they hit, and then they go like that. As you adjust zeta here. And this is for big zeta, and this is going towards 0. Zeta equals 0, you only go right on up, right?
So then, for this diagram, yeah, and then your example with the tent,
mm-hmm.
We're looking at side view.
Well, we're
so
looking
this
at,
this
we're doing a cut, you
yeah.
know, kind of looking at a...
Look in this
right, yeah, yes.
But then, are we just looking at the top
just
half?
Just the top half.
Okay,
in fact, we're actually looking only logarithmically, and this is log of omega, right? We never actually get all the way to here. We're kind of looking in here, right?
Yeah.
And it's a log plot, so it's kind of, I mean, you
okay.
still have to do, it's this thing, and then you have to do turn this thing into dB, right? That's that, and you have to make this log. So it's not exactly what you see here, but
so then when this, you're saying the reason we don't want these to be positive is...
Is because see, I erased it somewhere up here. That if you take the inverse Laplace transform of the output, it's going to be growing because e to the plus something t is getting bigger,
yeah.
right? We want stuff that's e to the minus something t, so that means I want the poles over here.
Okay.
If they're over here, I got e to the plus something t, and that means they're getting bigger and bigger as time goes on.
Okay. And then how, I still don't understand how this one relates.
That's just the angle of the transfer function. If we took this thing right here, right, and we put this in, change S to J omega,
mm-hmm.
and then we put that in polar form. In fact, you could factor it first into these factors like this. You know, you got one with the plus and one with the minus, right? And then you take those two factors and put them into polar form. And then the angle of that would be this plot right here.
But I mean, there's no analogy like there is for this one.
Well, yeah, kind of. I mean, what happens is when this guy is kind of over here, you know, we change the zeta so he's way over here somewhere, then this thing, the phase change over here is quite gradual, okay? As we get it closer
okay, right.
and closer here, then, you know, things are kind of like this, and then all of a sudden it hits this place where the pole is, and something big happens there, and it changes, goes down. So you can kind of see why you would expect something to happen more quickly.
Okay.
And actually, as the pole is right on the J omega axis, as you go through it, it just changes the sign on the thing, and that's like adding 180 degrees to
okay.
your phase shift here.
Okay.
So the phase is kind of like analogous to the sign in complex numbers, you know, if you compare real numbers to whatever.
Now, okay, for this, we always start at zero.
Well, no, I just started at zero because if we plug in s equals zero here, I had omega zero with one.
Okay.
So I have one over one, and log of one over one is so log of one is zero. And so, no, it could be, depending on your transfer function, if this was a 10 here instead of a one, then this would have started at 20 dB.
So these two poles are not necessarily the same magnitude?
Well, the...
I mean, you said they essentially come out of the board. Do they both come out the same distance, or is one here?
Oh, yeah,
here?
These will both come out the same distance on this,
so
but it's possible that the whole thing is up or down. In other words, those go to infinity there, but you could raise the whole sheet up if this number right here was much bigger, right? If this number is gigantic here, then it raises the whole sheet up.
Okay.
So, it just makes the whole thing, you know, get bigger that way.
All right.
And I tried to do, you know, really simple with just a one on top, just to try and make things, you know.
So then, when we're solving this, we just want to find. We want to solve for s and find what values are.
Well, if you're doing this plot here, you can kind of look at this thing and figure out what zeta is. And once you've done this a little bit, you get the idea, well, zeta equals 1 is going to be a nice curve like this, going to go no bumping. And, you know, as zeta gets close to, you know, you can look how many dB it's bumping up here. And people that do this often will kind of memorize, well, zeta is 0.2 gives me this many dB, 10 dB, or whatever it is, right? And they'll kind of have that kind of thing. The thing I'm really trying to get you to get is the idea that this bumps up a little bit, right?
Okay.
This is kind of a resonance behavior. It's kind of like, you know, when you get these poles close to the J omega axis here, it's getting kind of like a swing, right? You know, like a swing that you put a kid in and they swing, you know. It will kind of, you know, go like this for a while, and if you keep pushing it at that frequency, you know, it goes pretty good,
yeah,
right?
Okay.
And this plot here tells you how it goes if you keep pushing it at that frequency with a sine wave. You know, here you're actually getting more out than you would expect, right? And why are you getting more out? Well, because it's kind of resonant at that frequency, right?
Okay.
Because the pole is close here, so it likes to, you know, go at that frequency. The transient response is at that frequency, and you push it at that frequency, and it likes that, you know.
Okay.
And you can see, you know, you can see if you're close to that frequency, still works pretty good, right? So, you know, when you're pushing your kid sister in the swing, you know, if you don't get it to the timing exactly right, she's still happy, right? But if she was like, if this thing was like zeta equals zero, it would go woof de boo.
Yeah.
And then if you didn't get it exactly right, there would be a big difference, right?
Okay. So then what do we actually use these for? I mean, what?
Well, it depends on what kind of ride you wanted. Suppose you're designing your shock absorbers for your car, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you write the equation, and it would be, you know, you've got a spring, and you've got a viscous damper that's just a shock absorber, and the spring is a spring, and you've got the mass of the car. And you write your model, and you know the very simplest model would be this second order kind of a thing, right?
Okay.
And so you decide what kind of a ride you want. You know, do I want this thing to bounce like this, or do I want it to, you know, come down as fast as possible, or you know, and that basically is basically telling you how you adjust your parameters, how you set your poles, In new cars, there's some new cars nowadays that actually have feedback systems on their shock absorbers.
Yeah.
And they will, you know, you can dial what kind of ride you like by, you know, adjusting the feedback parameter beta there, which is basically just moving your poles around here.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
And you know, those kind of things are really important to, like, car manufacturers, you know, the Cadillacs, you know, they're supposed to be, you know, kind of like floating on a cloud or whatever, you know, But there's many other applications of the same kind of stuff that you'd be possibly working on, you know, you just, so.
Okay, I'm just trying to figure out how to look at it, why it's important, what I do with it.
Right, yeah, that's a good thing to do. Well, it's a good thing to do, try and figure all those things out, and that's really great. And, you know, basically what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get you so that you understand how to make those plots and get a little bit of intuition about what these roots mean. Mm-hmm. And so when you get to feedback, you know, when you look at things like we were talking about there, the things that make it oscillate, then yeah. That won't be totally like, oh man, what in the world is he talking about, you know?
I'm still not clear, you know, if you're looking at this, what is it I'm supposed to look for? What?
Well, this tells you, if you put a sine wave into this system,
mm-hmm.
It'll tell you how much the thing, this guy tells you how much, how big the bounce is coming on the output compared to how much you put input. So if you did it here at a very low frequency, you'd get the same amount of bounce out as you put in. But if you did it right here close to the resonant frequency and you had this one right here, you push it a little bit and you, whoa, Jack, it's going bigger than I pushed it, you know?
And then beyond
that frequency, then it acts kind of like, you know, it's attenuating, and the higher and higher you go, you know, you try to move this thing really fast like this and it's just not working, you know?
Okay, well that makes sense.
So, and this thing right here tells you the phase delay. It's kind of like there's almost no phase delay on this Z=1. There's no phase delay, very, very little delay, very little delay, and then all of a sudden you get right here and then there's a big jump in delay. You know, it's like the cosine wave turned to minus the cosine wave almost.
Okay. All right.
So this tells you how far the cosine wave was shifted. This tells you how big it grew or shrank.
All right. Well, it's making sense. I just need something I can steady.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, hang your hat on there. I understand. And probably, you know, at this point, we're still in that stage where, you know, how it was with calculus. They told you, yeah, you're going to need this someplace, right?
Yeah.
And how that's so disgusting, but we're kind of still doing that, you know.
Okay. It is starting to make sense.
Right, yeah. Well, I'll keep thinking about it. You know, I can remember how when it was that way for me, too, so don't feel bad. But keep working on it, you know. Keep trying to understand it. What in the world is this good for? What does this mean? Why are we doing this, worrying about this stuff? Yeah.
Or you finish the final exam and then it all quits.
Yeah.
That's always a great thing. Harder than the original problem. This is great.
One more.